I am indebted to three 20th century scholars for this morning's sermon who wrote much on this famous text, the late Henry Nouwen, Will Willimon, and Walter Brueggemann. It's a story we know well. A man has two sons. What does the younger son say? Father, give me my inheritance. Or in other words, Father, please drop dead. Right? There's no other way for him to get his inheritance otherwise. Shows little regard for the father. But the father gives it to him. And soon the son leaves for a distant land. In The Taming of the Shrew, Shakespeare captured perhaps the wanderlust of this young man. Such wind as scatters young men through the world to seek their fortunes further than at home where small experience grows. We don't know much what this young man does out in his distant country, other than Jesus says that he engages in dissolute living. It's a polite term. Some other English translations will say loose living, still a polite term. Jesus doesn't sort of fill in what that loose living looks like, so you'll have to do it for me. You know, just fill it in. What appeals to you? Loose men, loose women, a lot of chocolate cake, you know, whatever happens to fit for you. But I think loose living invariably is much more interesting in imagination than it is in reality. Because eventually it's the hangover, the empty pockets, the Monday morning, and you wake up. I expect we all have known people whose partying was just a little too determined to look like fun. As if one were partying because there was something, maybe someone, pulling the strings. And it may be the case that loose living is anything but loose and free. We don't know when or how long, but somewhere along the way, the boy we read comes to himself. He's saying, well, wait a minute, I don't have to starve out here. I have a father, I have a home. So he turns back home. We read that he's written a speech for the occasion. You know, now look, Dad, before you start yelling, let me explain why she answered the phone when you called my number. Right? You know, something like that. Dad, I've sinned. I'm unworthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. But did you notice the father's not interested in speeches? He never lets his son finish. Instead, he just invites him in. Robe, ring, sandals. Come in, the father seems to be saying. I'll show you what a real party looks like. It's a shocking story. We wonder what God is like. And in response to the theological question raised by the scribes, the Pharisees, the tax collectors, and the sinners coming to listen to Jesus, we get a wild story about the homecoming of a ne'er-do-well, welcomed home with a party. It's not what we expect. Now, we want the Father to be gracious, but not too gracious. I mean, homecomings for the ne'er-do-wells are fine, but it would be better if the ne'er-do-well showed up in sackcloth and ashes and just looked bad. We don't want to see them all dressed up. So perhaps our question is really the question of the older brother. I mean, is it fitting at all to throw a party to one such as this? Jesus, in telling this story, expends more verses describing the party than any other aspect of the story. And of course, that's part of the scandal. Jesus' critics were murmuring, this man eats and drinks, that is, parties, with sinners. I mean, what kind of savior is that? What kind of rabbi is that? What kind of teacher of Israel is that? And when they murmur against Jesus, you'd sort of expect him perhaps to back off and say, yeah, but I'm going to redeem these tax collectors and prostitutes. I'm going to make them straighten up, be more responsible, more middle class like you and me. No, he doesn't do that. Instead, he tells a story about a father who loves to party with his son who's returned, about a God who loves to party with sinners. He tells a story of the one who finds a lost coin and celebrates, the one who finds a lost sheep and celebrates, followed again by this biggest blowout of them all. they began to celebrate. It's the end of scene one. In return from the wayward son from a distant land, Jesus sort of dramatizes his return from his own exile. It's Israel's exile. It's our exile. It's Israel's alienation from God. It's our alienation from God. And the long deportation, the long exile is finally over. Let's come and celebrate and party. Of course, perhaps the most interesting character in the story is not the younger wayward son or the older brother, but it's the father. He's the real prodigal, I think, in the story. Prodigal means one who is extravagantly wasteful. And the father is a prodigal in the sense that his love is extravagant and wasteful, more excessive than either the younger brother's loose living or the older brother's sort of moral rectitude. It may be deep down that this is a story about a parent who is excessive in his persistence to have a family. An old man who greets us when we drag ourselves in from a distant land after good times have gone bad, or who has come out to us in the darkness of our self-righteousness and begs us to just simply come in and party. Therefore, it's a story about me, and it's a story about you. And it's a story about what it means to be claimed. Notice this story is not primarily about forgiveness, though there is that in the story. Rather, again, it's a story of what it means to be claimed by someone. I suspect the younger brother is known to us and to our families, the person always sort of grasping for air, the person always threatening to leave and then sometimes does leave. And it may be the case that in each of us, there is that person who is grasping, reaching for space, kicking at the bounds, wanting to be free in whatever definition free looks like. But the older brother is known to us, the always dutiful, always thoughtful, caring, concerned. But after all of that, eventually just sort of gets filled with sort of resentment. I mean, anybody just gets tired of being responsible all the time. Every family has somebody who carries so much of the moral weight that after a while he or she just gets sick and tired of it, feels that other people are using them and just would wish other people would just shape up. But again, it's mainly a story about the father. Finally, at the end, both brothers must deal with the father. On the one hand, did you notice that both of them get what they need? He lets the younger son come back with ring and robe and sandals, grafts him back into the family. But the father also gives the older son what the older son desperately needs, a kind of reassurance. "You are always with me," he says. "Everything I have is yours." But on the other hand, did you notice the father does not give the younger son what he wants? "Father, make me one of your hired hands." He's not going to do that. He's either going to do a whole lot more or a whole lot less than that. And the older son really just wants a party. He just wants a goat to celebrate with friends. And the father says, "No, you're not going to get a party. You're going to get everything. Everything I have, which happens to include your brother." I suspect all of us are either busy self-actualizing in some distant country of self-indulgence, or else we sit in some lonely darkness of self-righteousness. And yet our actions betray who our parents are. There's perhaps something a little too determined in our loose living, a bit too determined in our righteous indignation. Perhaps deep down we know that when the chips are down, the old man waits. When finally the loose living has trapped us or our righteousness has exhausted us, the old man will still be there to plead. To plead and forgive or plead and invite us in. But in either way, he takes us. This great old story's claim is that the God is one who refuses to stop silently waiting or earnestly pleading for you. The one who, in fact, finds us in a distant country, either a country of loose living or self-righteousness. The one who has found us, claimed us, and who has died for us in all our wayward ways. This great story imagines a world where people have a home, where somebody's determined to have us, where younger brothers and sisters who leave, or resentful older brothers and sisters who don't, all with claims upon us. Which means this is a story really sort of a deep, true sort of wisdom. Not the conventional sort of modern story of a journey into the deeper recesses of our own egos. That's not the way to grow, it's the way we shrink. It's a story about two brothers who had a father. Without the father, there's no family in this story. In fact, there's no story. The old man loves them both and is determined to love them in ways that do not abandon them to their own worst faults. Which paradoxically means we have here now seen true freedom, to know who owns you, to know who has claimed you. Because if you don't know to whom you belong, if you don't know who waits for you down the road, you're apt to be willing to fall victim to just about anything, anything blowing through the wind that promises something to overcome our emptiness. So if you ever have to stand before the corporation or the conformist group of a peer pressure or even an IRS audit, it's freedom to know that none of them own you. Did you know the story doesn't have an ending? We're never really told if the younger brother, in fact, grows up, bought a Buick, and did something sensible with his life. We don't know if the older brother actually ever came into this party. But since it's a true story, I doubt they lived happily ever after. Maybe Jesus doesn't end the story because this is a story that he himself will end. That the beginning of the end of that story is Easter morning, where death is overcome, where alienation is overcome, where our exile is overcome. The risen one is now will overcome all darkness, all division, and in obedient love, he will finally make a family out of all of us, finally invite us in, give us what we need. I do not know whether your journey up to this point has been good, bad, or otherwise, but I know that this story says that you do not journey alone, for there is one who has claimed you, one who has plans for you, one who waits or prods, invites or blesses, and will bring you and me and the whole creation to completion, to family together. That means that one will sooner or later have us all. Thanks be to God. Amen.